And now, my friends, on TalkSport Extra Time, we'll be live till 5. Here's a sobering thought. It was a year ago, almost to the week, that we lost a national treasure, truly a national treasure, an overused phrase sometimes, but Jimmy Greaves was undoubtedly that and a whole lot. Not only a man who had not one but two amazing careers, first in football, then of course in broadcasting, but also somebody who I think was sunshine whenever he entered a room. I was privileged of working with him once or twice. I was producing a show. He came on about the World Cup, the Japan World Cup with Johnny Vaughan, and he was a brilliant guest several times for us on that one. Always had a word for everybody, always happy to sign autographs, to pose for photographs, and he was, of course, in his day as a player, an absolutely astonishing figure. I mean, 382 goals or thereabouts in 579 appearances, 6 hat-tricks for his England career, and also Spurs' best ever score, I think, with a magic number of 266. Wow, that barely scratches the surface of the man, but the rest he's done in a brilliant new book, very moving. It's rare I read a book that, you know, brings a tear to the eye and makes you laugh out loud pretty much every page. The book is called The Jimmy Greaves We Knew, The Authorised Celebration of a National Treasure, and the man who put it together is with us now, the mighty Mike Donovan, published by Pitch. The book's called The Jimmy Greaves We Knew, and Mike, you knew Jimmy, of course, did you not?
I did, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say intimately, but yes, I met him a few times. It was one, I think, his 70th birthday. He had to do a gig on his 70th birthday. I met him there, and I've met him sort of a couple of other times. It was a difficult to meet when I met him. Really, I mean, I can interview all sorts of people, but he was like my number one sporting hero, and putting it in a professional context, it was hard to keep my mask on, you know, when I was talking to him.
But again, he was I mentioned a unique figure. He was, when we learned of his death, I think both Chelsea and Spurs held a minute silence for him. Of course, we could have had one at West Ham. He wasn't with us long, but he was loved everywhere he went, I think, wasn't he? Because he made such an impression. How did you compile this book? Where did the idea for it come from? Because it's a great way of capturing the man's life with the different Jimmy Greaves that different people knew.
Sure. Well, I mean, the idea stemmed from his agent and friend, Terry Baker, initially. And I thought it was a great idea because it was so simple. You know, it's such a simple idea. And you get to the heart of the matter because these people, this character meant a lot to these people, particularly his family, obviously. And he seemed to be loved everywhere. He wasn't just it wasn't just Spurs, West Ham, Chelsea fans. It was the whole country, you know, that everybody loved him.
Well, also, he had that remarkable career. I mean, he was very much a face, I thought, of the swinging 60s. I was too young to remember that. Even I was too young for that. But, of course, he then moved off. He became one of our first players to make a high-profile move abroad to a glamour club. And he simply couldn't settle there, could he?
No, he couldn't. No, I mean, he said he admitted afterwards that he just went for the money, basically. He had one kid and then another one on the way, and it was all a bit tight in this country because the maximum wage, you know, was only 20 quid a week. And he just did it for the family, really. And then he didn't get on with the coach out there, Nero Rocco, who gave him a hard time, apparently.
So he was off to AC Milan, and he comes straight back and goes from Chelsea to Milan, from Milan to Spurs, and the rest really is history, is it not? I mean, what a player he was for Spurs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had the privilege of watching him all through his Spurs career, and he was absolutely electric when he got the ball. I don't think there's any player, maybe George Best, maybe, but when he got the ball, there was a complete buzz around the ground. You know, you knew something was going to happen, and 9 times out of 10, it ended in the back of the opponent's net.
I mean, that's what was astonishing about him, was he almost had this kind of magnetic attraction towards the goal. And he also seemed to be somebody who could thrive and survive in a far more physical era of football. I mean, when the likes of, you know, we all know the names, Norman Hunter, Tommy Smith, Chopper Harris, those guys were out and about, were taking pieces out of players.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I interviewed Chopper, actually. he told me quite an amusing story about he was very young when he was marking him, and there was a free kick, and Jimmy distracted him at the free kick and said, "Oh, look, it looks like it's going to rain." And Ron looked up in the sky. And free kick, and Jimmy scored. So, but yeah, I mean, I think Ron was very proud of his record against Jimmy, actually. I mean, and also, as you said, these guys, Norman Hunter, they didn't take any prisoners, these guys, and the pitches were appalling. I mean, it just shows you, I mean, his record is, I mean, he's got the best goal-scoring record of any player in the English League by miles, you know, 357, I think it is. in about 516 games. Something
amazing. We're talking to Mike Donovan, author of The Man Behind, who's compiled The Jimmy Greaves We Knew, The Authorised Celebration of a National Treasure. And I bought a previous book of yours on Alan Gilzean, also another great Spurs player, for my dad, because he always maintained he loved Gilzean as a player, and he thought he was a kind of underrated player, partly because he was there when Jimmy Greaves was on the pitch. And when Jimmy Greaves was on the pitch, all eyes were on him. And also when he was off the pitch, I think all eyes were on him. He was a real character, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He just had an easy way about him, you know. That I think the fans responded to him, and that's why he was so popular all around the country. You know, he had this just easy manner, and it obviously, when he went into his television career, it transposed into that. And he was, you know, Saint and Greavesy is still revered as probably the favourite
it was a forerunner to a whole new wave of the way football was talked. I don't think there'd be a talk sport without Saint and Greavesy, to be honest, but where being irreverent and knowledgeable at the same time, and also the kind of sense of humour and funny brought to it, because we had two players who'd been at the top of their game then acting as broadcasters, and not acting, being great broadcasters. And it ran for, I think, 85 to 92, and then Jimmy's career didn't end there, did he? He carried on at Central Television, where I think he'd started in the middle, until 1998, I think.
He had a very long television career. I mean, I spoke to Gary Newbon about it, and Gary reckons he was a real pioneer. I mean, alluding to what you were just saying, he kind of transformed it, really, because everything was a bit po-faced as far as, football.
And also, he could get away with saying some of the harshest things, because he said it was such a smile on his face and a twinkle in his eye. In fact, Gary was saying that he approached him about doing some show, and it was only like the afternoon before that Greavesy finally phoned back and said, "Oh, yeah, I'll do it. My wife won't forgive me if I don't give it a go." And out of that sprang this amazing career, because Greg Dyke, I think, then headhunted him and brought him to, London Weekend Television for their sports, Saturday sports, and, of course, Saint and Greavesy was born.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, they were just a magic duo. I mean, it really kind of worked. They both, I don't know. I mean, he was the straight man, I guess, Saint, and Greavesy was a funny man, and it balanced out really well.
And of course, while that was going on before that, he'd been through an absolutely terrible time personally. Also, he'd shared that terrible time with his partner, with his wife. There was talk of divorce at one time, because, of course, he was very frank about it. The first player, I think, to admit that kind of problem, about his alcoholism, a terrible struggle there.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's, who knows, you know. I mean, you know, we always had have a drink here and there, but, I mean, it really got out of control. And I mean, this is the family opened up on a lot of that, and it must have been harrowing for them. And it just shows the strength of character of the guy to get through that. Yeah. And then after that, kind of forged this career, which it gave him more satisfaction than his actual football career.
And was it difficult for his family talking to you about all this? Because, I mean, his death, I mean, it's still only a year ago that he died. It must have been very tough for the family.
Well, yeah, the wounds, obviously, you know, are very, very sore. And I had to be very delicate. And I was absolutely so privileged and honoured to actually, for them to open up to me. And, you know, they wore their heart on their sleeve. And he was loved. He's so loved by his family. You know, he's such a lovely dad, granddad, you know, great-granddad. I mean, he was just a popular guy, you know. Everybody who came into contact with him loved him. And, you know, if you want to meet your heroes, you want them to be like that.
And also, he was a real instinctive sense of storytelling and broadcasting. I remember when he worked on the show I was producing with Johnny Vaughan, only a small thing, but he asked Johnny, he said, just before we go, he said, "Johnny, ask me where I keep my World Cup medal from 1966. So we, you know, didn't have time to research it. Johnny asked me, of course, grief, and he told the story before, he went very sad, and he was, you know, obviously genuinely sad at times, but also remembering, he said, "I never got a medal, neither did Sir Alf." And he went into that whole story. Now, we kind of knew the story, but the way he'd asked Johnny to set it up was perfect. And, of course, it was that he brought that kind of thing instinctively to Saint and Greavesy and to all his TV appearances.
Yeah, I mean, he was just off the cuff. I mean, what people told me was that he never really kind of seemed to show much interest. And then the camera came on and he was alive, you know, and it complete natural. I mean, all his family said that what you saw on Saint and Greavesy was him. That was him. You know, that wasn't a mask or a put on. That was him.
And I was interested. You said that you thought he preferred his or was proud of his broadcasting career than his footballing career. Why was that then, do you think, Mike?
Well, I think because he had to try a bit hard, I think, because football came so naturally to him. You know, he was a. I mean, he was scoring millions of goals for Chelsea as a 14, 13-year-old. And it was just effortless for him. I mean, I've seen some of the best goals I've ever seen, and it was him that was a goal scorer. But that it came easy to him. And yet with the TV career, because that's kind of a whole new ball game, and he had to work a little bit at it. I mean, he was still pretty natural, but he had to work a wee bit harder.
And also, I suppose, was, as a former pro footballer, professional sports person, used to taking instruction, used to being coached. So he wasn't at all kind of uppity about that. I think he took advice on board. Now, I know you've written at least three books on other books on Spurs figures that I can think of. Alan Gilzean's biography, Dave McCarr you wrote about, and also Spurs Unsung Heroes. Is that it for you as far as books about Spurs goes? Mike, what's next for you?
I don't know. Well, I've promised my wife I won't do any books for a while because I'm kind of... I owe it to her to do something around the house at least. And I've got a couple of ideas in the melting pot, and I hope they come off. Because I think, really, I was brought up in that era, that golden era, the Spurs' best ever era, really, in many people's
eyes. Well, of course, he never won the league title, did he, Jim? I think he came second one year, won the FA Cup a couple of times and the European Cup was up. Never won the title.
No, they should have won. They should have won a double double. Actually, when they won the double before he came, and then the following season they had a great chance of doing it again, and lost to Ipswich twice. And Ipswich won the league, and he didn't. No, so he was top goal scorer for about six seasons.
Wow.
During the 60s. I mean, and he had a phenomenal goal scoring record. I mean, just crazy, crazy.
And who would you compare him to, if anybody, among today's players? Or will we not see his like again, do you think? I mean, the game is very different then, of course, but who might he remind us of in today's game?
Well, I guess the one that's been most compared is Lionel Messi, really, because he kind of... it's like the ball's glued to his feet and he just shimmies past people. I mean, he was so quick and he's very quick-minded and very quick off the mark. You know, it was a natural gift. And I think that does remind me of Messi, the way he jinks through and scores goals. So he's about the nearest. And, I mean, I rate him the best goal scorer of all time, you know. I mean, maybe Pelé got more goals, maybe... Messi got more goals, but to me, he was the most natural goal scorer that's ever drawn breath, you know.
And that multifaceted man, Jimmy Greaves, is reflected brilliantly in Mike Donovan's new book called The Jimmy Greaves We Knew, The Authorised Celebration of a National Treasure. It's out, I think, early next month, I think it's out from Pitch Publications. Order your copy now and tell them Paul Ross sent you. It's Talksport Extra Time with me, Paul Ross, with GG Poker, 18+, begambleaware.org. More from us after this.